A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome to another episode of Happy Mum, Happy Baby, the podcast. I'm super excited today. So about, 7 or 8 years ago, I knew everyone was talking about something called insanity. Then my sister started doing T25, got me hooked. Then we started following this person on Instagram. We literally send your posts to each other. They're inspirational. They make us laugh. Since then, I found out that you've got two boys, twin boys. So I found out then that you were in London and there was no way that I wasn't going to try and get you on. That's the longest intro ever, but it's Sean T.
Thank you so much. That means so much to me. It really does because, you know, I love what I do. I never feel like I'm working. And then, you know, obviously the having kids adds an entire layer of craziness to who I am. And so not only do you and your family do my workouts, but the fact that you, I guess, you know, you're part of the family because now I have kids just means so much more.
Do you find that your interaction with people has changed after having kids?
100%.
Really?
I don't matter. Sean T doesn't matter.
Fair.
It's like, I'm going to use you and abuse you. I'm going to push play, work out, how are the boys? But I'm fine with it because I'm like, well, we made them. So, you know, at least they're still
adorable.
A part of me. Thank you. Thank you so much. They are adorable and wild. They're literally little versions of Scott and I.
Really?
To a T. Their personalities is so, it's so interesting. I mean, they have the same egg donor because we had our kids via surrogacy. And you can just look at Sander. I mean, he literally is a mini version of me. And Silas, he's a little cheeky. Scott was a little cheeky baby. You know, he was a little chunky. But their personalities.
The size differences.
Complete size difference. It's they are nothing alike. The only thing they like to do that's the same right now is hit each other, which is just, I'm like, where did you, we've never hit each other. How did you know? How do you know how to hit each other? Anyway, so, but it is a whirlwind of amazingness. And, you know, you just never think you can love something so much or someone so much in such a different way.
Yeah. Has fatherhood surprised you?
Yes and no. So I had tons of cousins and there were so many kids around. And my mother ran a daycare center out of our house. So I knew how crazy having kids would be. And to be honest, Scott wanted to have kids. And I was like, I don't.
Really?
I was like, not me. I'm really good with kids. I would take my nieces and nephews and my sister, who's much younger than me, and family friends. I would take them for a day. And they would be like, oh, my gosh, you guys should have kids. I'm like, nope.
So you never, ever thought about having a family? No.
No, well, I mean, partly for two reasons. One, you know, growing up, you know, in the closet as a gay man, it's just not something that you really think you could do. But then, you know, once I got older, I was like, they're a lot of work. You know, like just having a kid for an afternoon, it's a lot of work. Yeah. But Scott wanted 11 kids. He was like, I want 11 kids.
Why 11?
Right. I'm looking at producers like, yes, it's crazy.
Why 11? Why that number?
He wanted a soccer team. He wanted an entire soccer team because he played professional soccer. So I was like, well, let's meet somewhere in the middle. Let's have two. I was like, we have to have an even number. For some reason, I was like, we have to have an even number.
How do they entertain each other?
And but it took us 5 years. And I think that through the surrogacy process, through the miscarriages that some of our surrogates went through, just the entire process, that was the thing that really made me really connect to having kids and to really appreciate them. I think that if we had them first try not that I wouldn't have appreciated them. Obviously, I would have, but I didn't go through a really tough experience to really appreciate them now. And so I think because we went through that, it was the toughest thing I've ever been through in my life. Just like the sadness and, you know, the different emotions from the women that helped us along the way in our relationship and how that dynamic, you know, really changes the relationship. Because if you look at a heterosexual couple, people are trying, it becomes a counting game. It's like we're trying 5 times and, you know, now tell people stop counting, just enjoy each other. And so knowing what that was like in that stress, now when I look at them, I'm just like, I don't know what my life would be without them. Like, I don't know what it would be so wild. Don't get it twisted. Sometimes I'm like, can I send them back for a good 3 days? Let me breathe. But I don't know what our life, it would be so weird to not wake up and see their smiling faces and just, it's just wonderful.
Did you know people before you started going through the whole process that had been through it?
Only one. Right. So we were visiting a friend for Thanksgiving, and she and her wife had kids via surrogacy.
Right.
So she mentioned it to us, and then I reached out to a doctor. But we never had friends go through it before us, so everything was basically cold turkey for us, the highs, the lows.
Did you think that you entered it quite naively, first of all, then? You didn't really know about those highs and lows. You just think, oh, we're going to go there. We're going to get an egg donor. It's going to do that. Wham, bam.
Yeah. If you talk to Scott, he was like, I thought it was going to happen one time. We're healthy. You know, our sperm count was good. We chose really amazing women who have had kids. You know, so there was nothing that, quote unquote, shouldn't have worked, except for the man upstairs didn't want it to work. Yeah. You know, I remember sitting in our doctor's office, our fertility doctor's office, for the very first day.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, I want to tell you both a story. And so we're like, okay. And he told us about a couple that he helped have kids, and it took them 6 times. And so he wanted to let us know that this doesn't happen overnight. Yeah. But we still walked out of there like, we got this. And you know, I think that just that one conversation, like, his honesty was so incredible that he literally said, it doesn't happen overnight. And I think I kept attaching to that when times got really tough. And I was like, okay, but I didn't think it would be 5 years, 6 egg donors, 5 surrogates. And
so how do you go about finding an egg donor?
It's kind of funny. So I think it's the craziest and the most amazing thing.
Yeah.
It's like going on Match.com.
Really?
You literally go on a site, and you want to choose a reputable site because, I mean, there's, you know, obviously there's some good and some not so good. But you go on a site, and you choose, you know, ethnicity, height, weight, and then you get the profiles of these people.
All right, okay.
You can choose age. You get the profile, and you start reading the profile. And you really just, you know, immerse yourself into these individual lives that you think you can connect to, just as you would if you were on Match.com, except there's no conversation back and forth. Every question and answer you have is pretty much in their profile.
Right, okay.
And
so do things like personality, character, their hobbies, is that all in there as well to let you know more about who they are?
It is, but if it's not, for us, we move on.
Right, okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So for us, and I think the number one, anyone who wants to obviously donate the eggs and help a family out, it's not, they help heterosexual couples and gay. I just think they're just angels. It's amazing. And people do it for different reasons. So yeah, so that's how it was. I'll tell you the day that we found our egg donor that actually ended up really helping us. And so we had gotten really bad news, and I looked at Scott and I said, I'm finding our egg donor today. I was like, this is the day. Whoever I find today is going to be the one. And so I just started searching. I searched out the best egg donor agency I can find online. The website was really good. It was very clear. And then I just started searching. And I found this woman. And egg donors use an alias because they don't want you to know their name. So this person used an alias, but in her profile, she introduced herself as her real name. And that immediately I said, she's a very honest person.
Yeah.
So anything I read after this, I'm going to believe it. And so she carried so many traits that Scott and I have. One, education was really huge. She was close to her family. She was a singer, a dancer, and an athlete.
Right.
And she wanted to open up her own fitness studio by helping a family. She wanted to open up her own gym. And so she figured that if she were to help someone else with their dreams, and, you know, this could in turn. And, you know, full disclosure, I stalked this person. Not stalked. I ghost followed them.
Yeah.
And in less than a year, everything that was in her profile that she said she wanted to do, she did. And
really?
I just thought it was, I was like, oh, it was wonderful. Yeah. And so that day, and Scott was like, I believe you found the one, and we did. So, but it took a long time.
Yeah.
It was really tough.
And was that your first egg donor?
No, that was our last.
That was the last one.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I mean, we've had surrogates that, one of our surrogates had 7 kids via surrogacy before us. And nothing. And people have, and some of these women have gotten pregnant for us. It just didn't, you know,
yeah.
go
well,
all
your,
the way.
Nicole, your first surrogate, yeah. your sister-in-law.
Yeah, so she was our second surrogate. So
Yeah,
so we had a surrogate before Nicole who tried twice.
Right.
And then the funny story is I actually texted my brother. I was like, do you think Nicole will be our surrogate? You know, it's your wife. I'm just going to ask you via text. He was like, did you really ask me that over text messages? I was like, and he was like, of course we would, just like that. Aww. But then, you know, obviously the conversation went forward and Nicole got pregnant. And then right before, it was the day, I think, before we were supposed to hear the heartbeat, then we found out she had a miscarriage. And that was just, and then she ended up, her and my brother ended up trying for 2 years
really?
More. And then here's the crazy part. The very last time, it was January of 2016, maybe. She got pregnant. It was just like an early pregnancy that didn't, you know, go all the way. And then a month and a half later, she was like, I'm pregnant. So the first thing she asked her doctor, she was like, could this be theirs? And because her and my brother were practicing safe sex because they didn't want any more kids.
Yeah.
And it was theirs. A month and a half later, we were like, are you kidding me? Like, what is happening? So we were obviously really happy. We got another niece. But it was just like, oh, my gosh. Like, what is happening? And then...
Was that really hard to go through as a family? You know, Nicole miscarrying. And because obviously, if I watched the tiny little clip of her in your TV, Instagram TV. And there's a clip where she's really sobbing into the camera. And you can kind of feel like, so I've been through a miscarriage. And you feel like you've failed your unborn baby. You feel like you've failed your partner. And in that case, she'd felt like she'd failed both of you.
Right. I think that was what was the toughest.
Yeah.
You know, it's really incredible when someone really wants something for you and is extremely selfless, you know, and the things that she had to go through. I mean, she went through a lot to get her body ready. It actually strengthened our relationship with her for sure, because, I mean, when you have a surrogate, if you have a surrogate and you don't feel like you're in a relationship with them yourself, I think you're doing yourself a disservice. Now, there are a lot of people out there that are like, I don't want to know the person, and it's a business transaction, and I think that's fine. But for me, I think growing our relationship through the process, it actually helped the pain at the end, you know, when she couldn't really quote unquote deliver for us. It strengthened our relationship, you know, so... But it wasn't tough on the family. It wasn't tough on us. Now, it's a good question. I never asked her and my brother how that affected them, even though if I can say some funny stuff. So, because I got to be a little funny. So the crazy thing is when, if a woman's married, her and her husband, they can't have any kind of intimacy through certain parts of the process. And if you're trying for 2 years... they just don't do it.
Yeah.
So we had to find like really creative ways for my brother to be happy. And thank God he was so good. He was like, you know, I haven't had sex with my wife for a year because of you. And I'm like, okay, let me think creative. What can I do? Not going to talk about it on this podcast. But, you know, so it was things like that that made it like fun and it opened up the communication. And I believe it may have helped them as well just because... You know, I mean, you now go from a 2-person relationship to a 4-person relationship, all because you want to bring life into the world. And there's a lot of sacrifices that are made. But I think the biggest thing that can come out of that is transparency, being open about your emotions with your partner and your family. And then obviously just communication in general will grow. At least it did for Scott and I.
Is that something that you and Scott like discovered throughout the process? Were there times where it was really low and actually you realized that we just need to talk?
Oh, yeah. So Scott and I are extremely close in general. We're literally best friends. It's great. But Scott's the kind of person that if he has a lot going on, it's all inside.
Right.
And I'm the kind of person that the minute I have something going on, I'm letting you know right away. So it's the exact opposite. My emotions are like a faucet, you know, just like you turn on the emotional water and I cry, I laugh, I cut up, I dance, you know, whatever I'm feeling, you know. And Scott's more of like, and I'm like, so what? How are you really feeling about it? And it's probably annoying for him, for someone to be like, hey, you got to talk about this. But it's also annoying for me that, you know, you're not talking about it. So that was the biggest thing that we learned in terms of a couple about each other and how to communicate is the common denominator of communication that we need when we're both going through a stressful situation. And it works really well now. And the other thing that it did, and I think this is really important for couples to hear, the other thing that it did was it helped me relax a little more and it helped him be a little bit more like energetic in certain situations. Because, you know, all of us, our past dictate, our past mixed with some DNA, nature versus nurture, dictates where you are in your life today. And sometimes it's okay to break the cadence of what your life was like, especially when you have a partner and you want it to grow. And I don't believe, a lot of people use the word compromise. I don't think it's compromise. I just think it's understanding. I think it's understanding. It's just like people say, I need to change. I'm like, well, you don't really need to change. You just need to get rid of the things that aren't working for you.
Why is change bad? Right. Like you can't go through something like 5 years that you went through and then becoming a dad and not changing. Like, why are we so scared of change?
Yeah.
It's a good thing.
It's so good. I'm just like, that's why I tell people, don't look at it as changing. Look at it as like
growing.
You're growing. You got rid of the things that aren't working for your life and like bring on really great things to help you progress forward. But yes, I am a completely different person. And one of the things I am is tired as all the time. It's so crazy. Like, so here's another interesting thing. If I'm talking too much, just
no, you just carry on talking. I love it.
Here's another interesting thing about health and your body. So even after we had kids, we still worked out. We still ate healthy. I actually went vegan because I was just like, I was trying to do anything to get my energy level, because the first 4 months with twins, we didn't have help. We had Scott's parents, but we didn't have hired,
you know,
babysitters. So it is so important for people to get help. Mm-hmm. It's so important for people to have time to themselves, working out, nutrition, and mental health, because even though I was working out, even though I was eating healthy, I still gained 7 pounds from the stress.
Really?
Still, you know. So that was a big eye-opener for me about how stress really impacts people's lives. And so, I mean, you have people, you know, they have heart attacks. They could be healthy, but they are super, super stressed. So I like to tell people mental health is just as important as the physical and nutrition. And so when you have kids, or even if you're just going through something, or if the kids are running around the house and it is a nightmare, it's okay to pull out the iPad, sit them in their high chair, and you go into the room for 10 minutes and just, you know, meditate. You know, it's really okay, because that's the thing that's going to help your body level out and you not necessarily gain that unhealthy weight.
Has it made you look at people that are going through that differently in terms of fitness and how you sort of handle that?
Well, I've always respected someone who was going through anything that had to do, especially being a new mom or new dad. I've always respected it. I just now have the understanding in a different way. And my perspective has come more from being on the outside trying to figure out what to do to saying, okay, I'm in that space right now. And one of the things that I'm actually going to do in the near future is I'm going to do all these, like, I call it like life hacks to not anti-aging, but to age healthfully. So one of the things that I still feel is I'm just so exhausted. So I'm on a mission to find things that bring people so much energy, make your skin feel good, make you feel like you can work out every day, even if it's just like these minor little things that you can do you know, take a really cold shower. I think the first thing I'm going to do is take a cold shower for 5 minutes every day. And I hate the cold, but apparently it does something.
It is meant to, isn't it? It's meant to like open your brain or something.
Yeah, I'm going to do it. I don't want to. But so, I'm going to try to find all these things because I think that's the one thing that where parents, you know, stress about. Even I'm sitting here and I'm speaking to you. And you want to know what? I'm super stressed about taking this 10-hour flight home. I'm speaking to you.
But you fly with your kids. You're so used to getting on that plane with two boys. But you've done it since they were young. So has every flight changed because of their ability?
Okay. So in the beginning, I mean, they were 3 weeks old. They were in a NICU for 3 weeks. We get them on the plane. It was fine. I mean, Sander pooped at the very end of the flight. And I'm like, and the guy who was sitting next to me, this is when I realized right away that not all people have sympathy or empathy for a new parent, because I asked them if I could get up because, you know, I mean, they're 3 weeks old and they're 2 months premature. Yeah. So this is a really small baby. I'm like, and I was like, oh, you know, excuse me. And he wouldn't get up.
What?
He wouldn't get up. And so the flight attendant.
Has he not seen the size of you?
But, you know, I have a baby, so
true.
I couldn't let
you're
him
weakened.
Have it.
Yeah.
But I had to ask the flight attendant to ask him to get up. And I was just like, this is ridiculous. So I realized then that traveling with kids was going to be intense. But when I go on like smaller trips, like if I go to LA, like in a couple of weeks, I think I'm going to have to go to LA. I'll tell one of the babysitters, come with me, bring the boys.
Yeah.
Like I want them to still like do certain things,
yeah.
You know,
and while
short
they can,
trips.
While they're not in school.
Because then when they hit school, it's going to be a lot different. But, you know, I can't wait for the day where, you know, they're maybe three or four and I say, hey, guys, I have to go to New York. And they say, can I go? I'm going to say, absolutely, you know, because I hope that day comes.
Isn't it crazy to think that everything you've been through has led you to those two boys? And if anything had been different, you wouldn't have them.
I can't even, like, we were talking about this the other day. We, as humans, we stress about so many things. And the thing is, if we didn't go through those stressful things or those things in our past, we wouldn't have made the decisions that bring us to the happiness we are today. And while a lot of things, obviously, I wouldn't have wanted to be molested as a kid or I wouldn't have wanted to have to move out my house at 14. But because that happened, I was able to find this life, you know, and I work on the stuff in the past. But, you know, I would have never met Scott. I would have gone to run track. I would have been to another school. I probably would have had a whole, you know, different way of living and, you know, and it's just so.
And even the relationships that you have in terms of like your grandparents, I know you were really close to them. Your kids are really close to Scott's parents, you know, making sure that those relationships are there.
Yes, yes. It's, I think it's really important. I have to tell you, I valued individual relationships with my family members before having kids. I never really, I don't want to say I undervalue family, but as a whole, it didn't, I was like, I like this person. This person's a nightmare. You know, for me, it was just individual. It was like, this person's good to me. This person's not. And I think it was because of what happened to me as a kid.
Yeah,
I was like, I don't trust everyone. But having kids now, I value the family dynamic and value family so much more. And just being able to teach them, you know, these are your grandparents, you know, they're going to see my mom in a couple of weeks, all the way to our friends who are like our family, you know, and our people, like neighbors who love them. So, you know, family is so important to me now, where before, like I said, it was more of an individual relationship thing. Now,
do you think
there's
a massive thing as well of why you didn't want to have kids? Is what happened to you as a child?
Yes. Oh my God, you are about to make me cry. Hold on. So like my, like one of the things that's just was so stressful to me is I didn't want what happened to me to happen to my kids.
Yeah.
And when they, you know, and that was the other thing, I didn't really mention it, but since we talk about it, you know, when I leave them, I'm like, I have to make myself trust the babysitters. Like I have to make myself not say, did you touch them?
Yeah.
Did you, you know, I still go through that today because it happened to me by my, you know, stepfather, a living person. So I still have like those trust issues a little bit and I have to make myself, you know, I think I'm always going to watch, but I don't let that lead the charge in terms of like my emotional state. And obviously, I mean, our babysitters are incredible.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I don't want to add that pressure to them, like, oh, Sean is thinking that. But I mean, you know, one of them has read my book, so she probably understands my emotional state, and we have really great connection. And then the other one, we just have a really good connection, and we have great humor with each other. So, you know, they know that I trust them, but it is definitely one of those things that I struggled with really hard, and I'm probably going to struggle with every...
Well, I imagine as they get older and they get closer to the age that you were when it started.
Yes, yes.
It'll like, probably adapt how you talk to them. And
yeah, and I really have to be really careful, you know, not to scare them. But I think it's just letting them know, and this is what we do now, even though our kids don't really respond to this. We say, how did you sleep? How was your day? Mm-hmm. You know, we want them to know you can talk. I don't want to say you can tell me anything. I just want us to live like that, you know? So me and Scott talk to each other. We talk to them. We ask them questions. We tell them what we did. So hopefully they'll know, you know, I don't have to scare them with like, make sure. I mean, there's always a conversation. Okay, you're going to a new place. Make sure you stay safe.
Yeah.
If anybody makes you feel uncomfortable, you let us know. But I don't want to feed them that negativity, you know, just
because we have the underpants rule here.
Oh.
Which is something like, what's in my pants is only for me.
Oh,
and
I like
so,
that.
Like, we say it to our sons all the time.
Even to, and this is extremely vulnerable, but so my kids don't like baths, they like showers.
Right. Fancy.
Which I'm very happy about because I hate giving baths. It is like, because they're jumping around, they're splashing the water. They want to get out. They poop in there. I mean, it's just too much. So one day I was taking a shower and they were like, and Sander like was like, shower.
Yeah.
So now I get home usually from tennis and this is since we've been here, and they want to get in the shower with me. And I'm like, this is great. And you know, and they see my pee-pee and they're like, pee-pee. And so I'm internally, I'm freaking out.
Yeah.
I am freaking out that they want to know because of what happened to me. Yeah. And I'm like, no, it's okay. Like, let's teach them anatomy. And I'm like, yes, you pee-pee in the toilet.
Yeah.
You have to clean it. You know, if I'm just washing them and rubbing their butt to wash or cleaning their pee-pee, even with a rag, internally, like, if you knew the internal turmoil that happens in my brain is so, it's like every day it's a terrible feeling that I have internal, but I know that they, you know, they're just like pee-pee and they think it's fun. Like they want to watch me go to the bathroom. And I know when we get home, they're going to be potty trained easily because they see me do it all the time. But whoo, if you knew that every time I had to touch anywhere just to clean them or change their diaper or just like use the baby wipe, I'm just like, it's like, it chokes me every single time. But I have to be like, okay, breathe. Like, just breathe. Yeah. Like, this is fine. Like, you know, you're not doing to them with, you know. So, yeah, so there's like some, you know, I think for me, they're the actual toughest moments of being a father because, you know, you just kind of maneuver your way. And I've been to therapy, but there's still, you know, post-traumatic stress in situations that I've never been in before now having kids that bring up, you know, some of the past, you know, pain or issues. So, but I'm maneuvering my way through it.
How awful, though, that someone, an adult, has done that to you as a child and then kind of done this to your life. So taking away those innocent moments of you and your kid.
Yeah. You know, they don't know, you know, so I think that's the good thing.
Yeah.
And one day they'll probably read my book and they will ask me about it. And I think hopefully they're much older.
Yeah.
And, you know, we can have an open conversation and I can tell them, you know, when you guys were younger and I had to clean you, you know, this was going through my mind. I think it'd make us closer at that point. But for now, when I clean them, they just say, pee-pee. I'm like, yeah, cleaning pee-pee. But, you know, and it's the other thing that makes me feel good. And maybe this is just me. Like I say, wash your shoulders, wash your tummy, wash your butt, wash your pee-pee.
Your
it's just another part, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And I've got to say, I love Scott's parents.
Me
From
too.
From what you show on Instagram, I just think they're absolutely adorable.
I want to do, it's so interesting you said that. Thank you. They are great. Now, you know, and they'll tell you, it's so interesting having kids, how our relationship with his parents has grown, but there's also been growing pains because for everyone, this dynamic of these two children coming in, it enhances the relationship, but you have to go through the hurdles.
Yeah.
But like our relationship is so now, like I'm not worried about the stressful things. I'm just saying like having kids enhances the relationship to a point where you're like, wow, like this is really cool. And it's because of them that made me really, you know, believe more in the family dynamic, the wholesomeness of a family. And they are humorous. They're fun. They're 76 years old. You would never believe it. They walk faster than Scott. They're just so great.
No.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Listen to this Acast show ad-free on Amazon Music with your Prime membership or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
So your babies, they were born early, weren't they? They were premature.
They were 2 months early, just under 8 weeks
early. And were they in a different state?
Yes. So they were born in Texas. So our surrogate lives in Texas.
Actually, I want to talk about your surrogate.
Yes.
Because Ashley, she's amazing.
She is.
You find her?
She is, when I tell you, unbelievable. It's unbelievable. How do we find her? So we were on year four.
Yeah.
One of our best friends, he and his wife, they're both our best friends, but they called us up one day and they were like, we know you guys are struggling to find surrogates. We want to do this. Mm-hmm. So our friend Alicia, she said, okay, you know, I'm going to do this. So she was on birth control for a really long time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for her to do this, you know, she had to go through the tests and stuff like that. And anyway, she went through two cycles of trying to figure out if her lining would grow.
Yeah.
As we all know, the uterus lining, so the embryos implant, just in case people don't know the science. And so it didn't work.
Yeah.
But Ashley worked in the office. So she was the third party coordinator. And she really handled a lot of same sex couples. So she was our third party coordinator. She had no idea that I was Sean T or, you know, she had no idea for that. She just got our file from our doctor in New York City. Mm-hmm. And her husband told her, you're going to work at a fertility clinic, but you're not going to be a surrogate. We're not doing that, you know, but I'm happy you want to help. But she saw our file and she went home to him. She's like, I sat him on the bed and I said, I have to do this for these guys. And
did she ever say what it was about your file?
I think the fact that we were trying for 5 years, mm-hmm. she saw like the ups and downs. And she just was like, I want to do it for them. And I mean, there was nothing about us. We didn't have to put anything about our lives. I think she just read it. And I think just she saw the fact that we kept trying and we didn't give up. I think that was a thing where she was like, I have to do this. Now, she had already had 3 kids. So she was, you know, and she was young. So she was like, I think I can do this. And so the day that she told us that Alicia wasn't able to be our surrogate, at the end of the phone call, she actually told Scott, she was like, and I want to do this. And it was just like, I don't know why it was such a joyous day, because we hadn't had success, but there was something about her where she worked in a fertility clinic. She's literally right under the doctor. We know that I think this fertility clinic has like an 83% success rate, which is unbelievable.
Yeah.
And so she did.
Is there something about someone finding you and saying, I want to do this for you, rather than you asking as well? So it's kind of like, is this something that's being given to us sort of way? You know what I mean? It's found its way to us rather than us chasing it.
Yeah, I think that's really profound that you say it like that, because I had given up. I never give up on anything, and I'm not going to cry on this podcast, but I said to Scott, I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. The anxiety, the not sleeping, the Googling, the joining like different online communities. Mm. And I'm the only man in there. You know, I'm the only man in these message boards, you know, trying to get advice from females who are going through the same thing. And And it was just, it became obsessive because I was just like, why isn't this working?
And you have a lot of control in your life. You know, you with your fitness, you do things that you can control. And fertility is something that you can't control.
You can't control. I remember Scott's father saying, this is so terribly difficult for you two because everything you've ever gone after in your life, you've achieved, whether it was sports, academics, love, marriage. I mean, while we worked really, really hard at these things, it was something, but we could control it. We can control how much we study to get great, to have great academic grades, right? Yeah. You can work really hard to excel in sport. You can work really hard to excel in your career. But when it comes to having children, it's not about you. It's not up to you. It doesn't matter how hard you work. It's whether or not the universe wants this to happen for you and when. And so I actually have a friend going through it right now. And she literally is going through the same process of, I know what she's going through. And I said to her, I was like, if you need to call me, vent, cry, anything, I know what you're going through. But it's also, I had to tell her, I was like, it's not up to you.
Yeah.
It's not up to you. And it doesn't matter how many times you try. And it doesn't matter how many cycles you have. It doesn't matter what your temperature is. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't.
People do. They get obsessive about stuff, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, there's the apps and, you know, they're counting their cycles. And while it makes you feel really good, at the end of the day, the amazing human that's supposed to be here is just waiting in the wings for the right time.
And also, you and Scott decided that you wanted two boys, one from you, one from him.
Yes, yes, yes.
And that was really important from the start.
That was important from the start. But then during the process, we didn't care what gender it was. We just started. We were like, just put
chuck
this
them all in.
Is it an AAA embryo? AB embryo? We didn't care. We just put them in.
Yeah.
So what was interesting, the very first time that Ashley was supposed to get the transfer, I think she had gotten her period, something with the medicine didn't work. So we still had to wait. And of course, you know, it was another thing. The interesting thing was that Scott did not allow me to have a relationship with Ashley because he was like, you have to let this out of your mind. You know, and it was hard for me, but I was like, hey, I need to try something different.
Yeah.
So then it was at the end of April, the second time where she, you know, was ready for the transfer. She had to transfer. And in my brain, I know she's having to transfer on this day, but no one's telling me anything because I'm, you know, my anxiety level is super high. But I've been doing this for 5 years, right? So I'm like, she's going to find out on my birthday whether she's pregnant or not. I did the math. I was like, so Scott comes in the room. He's like, you know, she's going to find out. And I'm like, on my birthday. And he's like, ugh, of course you know. And so, you know, so I woke up on my birthday and I said, this is either going to be a really good birthday or a really great birthday. Yeah. I didn't allow myself to say this is going to be a bad or good.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had a day full of fun and I was actually on the tennis court having a good time. And we got, I think it was a text message that had us call Ashley. And so we're like, ugh. And we've done this so many times. So it was just kind of really stressful. And she answered the phone and she was like, hey, guys. And we were like, ugh. The energy of her voice was just, and she was like, I'm super pregnant. And we were like, what? What? Like, why'd you have to be like that? So,
Fuja.
Right. So if anyone knows, you know, that the HCG hormone has numbers and her numbers for, I think it was 8 days post-transfer was super high. I think it was like somewhere like 5,000. So 2 days later, she had to take a test again. So we are 2 days later, we are flying to St. Martin because I was like, I'm just going to still have my birthday fun. I'm not going to stress about this. And we land and she tells us and we call her and she tells us that her numbers went from 5,000, which should have went to 10,000, you know, double, went to 17,000. Yeah. And so it was so crazy. So then we know, we are like, it has to be twins. You know, we just know. But now we're in St. Martin with all of our friends and family, and we can't say anything
because
we promised not to say anything until it was the right time. And so we leave St. Martin, and Ashley sends us a photo on our second flight, and it had two dark holes. So, you know, it was two.
Yeah.
And so we were so happy. We were so thankful for her. And then once that happened, then her and my relationship started. And it's amazing. Like, she is, I mean, she literally, I mean, we don't see her that much anymore. We still communicate with her. And
yeah, how does that work with a surrogate? Is she still in your life? How involved is she in terms of keeping up a relationship?
Yeah, so for everyone's different. Yeah. Some people are like, thank you, and they move on.
Yeah.
For us, we treat her like a family, and she's like one of my best friends that I just don't see all the time. Yeah. You know, we send her videos. We asked if she would, spend our boy's birthday with them every year. So
you're going to make me cry.
Yeah. So
that's so beautiful.
Yeah, so her first birthday, you know, she came out. And we just had, most people have, really big parties. And we're like, oh, you're crying. I know. For us, it was our first year, we want a small party. We want Ashley, us, and the boys, and then Scott's mom and dad. And if my mom was close by.
Yeah. Wait,
maybe did my mom come? But so we just wanted just a small little thing. So every year, you know, she'll come and she'll spend a birthday with the boys. But she'll come. I mean, if we go to Texas and we want to have vacations with her too. She's,
and her kids met your kids straight away.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So we made sure that before we left Texas, when we left the hospital, we made sure that her kids was able to spend time with the boys. And you know, early on, we would FaceTime and they would get to see them. But, you know, with Instagram and stuff, they still see them. And then we went to Texas for something else. And her and her husband, even her husband, Michael is just incredible. Like, they're so supportive. It's really spectacular. I mean, she should write a book on how to be a surrogate.
Really?
Because not only was she very communicative with us and telling us every step along the way. I mean, she actually worked in a fertility clinic. So, you know, there were points in a pregnancy where you're stressed because, you know, we've had so much bad news and I would ask these wild questions. And then an hour later, I would get a text message of a video of her, you know, giving herself an ultrasound. And seeing the boys kicking each other, and she's like, they're fine.
Yeah.
You know, and she's like, I got this. She's like, but you're going to help me lose weight after this. Just know that. So anyway, I say all that to say she really was amazing. Mm. And the other thing about the kids is one of the things that our first fertility doctor told us, who actually introduced us to our second fertility doctor, you know, he said, when there's young children involved on the surrogate side, you should document it, and the kids should really see the baby or babies when they're born, because they found that people who have been surrogates in the past, when they've had young kids, they'd be like, oh, the kid doesn't know anything. And there's been studies that have been done that the kids have some sort of post-traumatic stress of loss. Because they know that their mom was pregnant, and they feel like it's like a no one told them that this baby's alive, so they think the baby died or something like that, and they don't understand that a child still has those thoughts and those emotional attachment to a baby. So we make sure that the kids know.
Yeah,
they know where they are. They see them. They get to hang out with them, because that's really important.
Mm. And was it worrying after everything you've gone through, was it worrying when Ashley or her husband called to say that she was going to have the babies that night prematurely?
No, there was no
was
worry
not?
Because like, no. Because
it was how many weeks was she at that point?
She was, it's 40 minus 7, so 32 and some, 32 and 5 days or so, 32 and 4 days. So, I mean, Fort Worth Fertility is right next door to the hospital. So Ashley, I got to tell this story. I think moms who were pregnant will appreciate this. So it was 3 days before she had a baby. I'm not sleeping because she's not sleeping. So she's in Texas.
So in tune.
She's in Texas. But I'm acting as the husband at this point because Michael, her husband's like, listen, I'm going to bed. You know, I mean, he's awesome. But, you know, they bought a recliner chair. You know, she has all this thing. But she's not. She's just uncomfortable every single night. She's like, nothing's making me feel comfortable. So Michael's trying to, you know, help her out. Obviously, I'm on the phone. I think it's 1 or 2 in the morning. I'm, you know, just trying to figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
Her back is hurting really bad. So one morning she wakes up, she's like, I just don't feel good. But she goes to work and she starts, you know, what she now knows is contractions. She just didn't know. But she's in the office And our fertility doctor is like, Dr. Kaufman's like, you need to go to the hospital. So her coworker puts her in a rolly chair and rolls her over to the hospital. If you could, and Ashley's not, she's a small woman with this huge belly. I'm just imagining rolling across the street in an office chair, this pregnant woman, somebody pushing her. It's just so funny. But she gets into the doctor and they give her magnesium to, like, you know, relax her contractions. And Scott and I were supposed to go on a baby moon because we were finished work. I just had my book launch. We had 7 weeks. We actually had 6 weeks because she was going to deliver early anyway. But we had 6 weeks to vacation and travel. And we had friends that were like, we were going to our friend's house and they were going to wait on us hand and foot. We had like different resorts set up all around the country in our friends' homes. And so we were supposed to leave that next day. And when Ashley called me that morning, I was like, okay, this is, you know, I was like, do you think you're going to have the baby? She's like, I'm holding these babies in or whatever. So I was like, put the doctor on. So she put either the doctor or the nurse, I can't remember, but a woman got on the phone. She was like, you guys need to come to Texas tonight. She was like, she's having this baby. And Ashley's like, no, I'm not. I'm holding a baby. So then literally a couple hours later, Ashley sends me a message. She's like, I'm having a baby tonight. Scott's driving. I cannot tell him this while he's on his way home driving. Yeah. I'm like, okay. I'm like pacing at the door because I know he's going to freak out. So literally, I tell Scott like maybe around 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock. We run next door. We tell his parents, like, we have to go to Texas. Do you want to go? He books all of our flights. We pack. We're in the car. We think we're going to make it. Michael, Ashley's husband, calls and was like, we're not. She's giving birth to these babies within the next hour. So we get to the airport. I send him a message. He was like, you have time. We're going through security. It's the one time we go through security that they check Scott's protein powder and like all this stuff. And we're like,
our babies are being born.
And I know. And I'm looking at the phone like, please, please, please. So as soon as we get through security, there's these like, three chairs sitting right outside of the security, and Michael FaceTimes us, and he literally is FaceTiming us and has the phone facing the doctor and like everything that's happening down there. He shows us Ashley. She's out because she had to get C-section.
Right.
And we saw Silas and Sander born, and it was so, I didn't know what emotion. Scott's dad was crying. Scott was crying, and I'm like this, you know? So they pull Sander out, and you know, it's like one of those things where when you have kids like we did with the same egg donor, we're like, well, we wonder if we're going to be able to tell, you know, whose DNA has whose DNA. Not, it doesn't matter, but you just, it's just kind of a fun thing. The minute they pull Sander out, I was like, the shape of his head, I was like, there's no doubt. And then they pull Silas out. They were small, but they pull Silas out, and I'm like, there's the forehead. There's Scott's forehead. There's no doubt. Like, we knew right away. And then, you know, they were taking video, and Michael took video for us. And, you know, he kind of followed him over to the table, and Silas was having, like, some trouble breathing. So we're freaking out. He's like, don't worry. It's fine. But he's, like, literally documenting the whole thing. We get on a plane. He's sending us photos. And so
that flight must have been such a weird...
It was
how long was the flight?
It was only like 1 hour and 45 minutes.
How long did it feel?
Like 8 hours. Felt like I was coming to London. And we told Scott's mom and dad, we said, listen, we don't want to go through to baggage claim. So you need to pack, you know, be able to take your bags on a plane. Of course, they have one bag that had to get checked at the gate. And we're like, so anyway, we're landing, and I'm like, we have to name them. So we have picked 12 names that we would want, but we said we would only name the boys after we saw what they looked like. So Michael sent a photo while we were on the plane, which is cool. They had Wi-Fi. And so, you know, we started picking names. Every name I picked, Scott was like, no. Scott basically...
How did you leave it until that flight?
Because we wanted to see what they looked like first.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
first.
So you went down to 12. That makes
sense. We had 12 names.
Yeah. Okay.
So, you know, with 12 names...
Did they all begin with S?
Everything began with S.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you know what? I only realized that you all have names beginning with S when I wrote it down in my research.
Right. So Scott and I sign off a lot of things for our business or if we're doing anything, SB2. And so now we signed to SB4 because we have Silas, Sander, Sean, and Scott.
Yeah.
But you know, I really wanted another Sean.
Really?
I was like, can our firstborn be named Sean William? I was like, it could be Sean, and Scott's middle name is William. And Scott's like, no. Like, we don't want anybody named Sean because we don't want them to be a junior. And I'm just like, oh, my gosh. I was like, they're going to have their own. Right. So anyway, but I love Silas and Sandra. Yeah, the names are great. So, yeah, so we land, and then we have to wait at baggage claim, and then we, you know, then we have to drive. Like, everything is taking forever. Then we have to go to the rental car place, and then we, now it's like almost 12 o'clock at night.
Right,
you know,
okay.
Because, you know, Texas is ahead of us in the time zone. And so we get into the hospital, and obviously we're super excited to meet the boys. But one of the things we said is, no matter what, we go see Ashley first, you know, because you just have to, like. So we, like, we checked on Ashley. And it was so interesting. Like, I think some people would be like, but I want to see the kids. I want to see the kids. Mm-hmm. And I actually was like, well, I kind of want to spend a few minutes with her, you know. Because I think just the transition of kind of passing a baton, if you will. And so we spend time with her. And she's like, go see your babies. Aww. Like, she's like, get out of here, you know. You know, she wasn't allowed to hold them.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you're a surrogate, they take the babies away.
Oh, really?
You can't hold them. You can't see them.
Is that just something that's set by
it's
kind of...
It's pretty much a set.
And then it's
thing.
Up to you to change it, like to do what you want to? Or
I'm not sure if it's... I think maybe it's us, like in a contract maybe, but we all thought, you know, even for her emotional state, she's like, no, like you guys should be the first one to hold them. They should smell you first. Yeah. And so minus the nurses... And so she was really great with that, you know. So they took the boys and, well, we went to the NICU and we saw them and it was so tiny. And Ashley's mom was there and she actually filmed us meeting the boys for the first time. It was a family affair. I mean, it was just so, I mean, you could, for us, we couldn't have asked for a better, I say, beginning to, you know, a really rough 5 years, you know. So then a couple of days later, we're like, Ashley, like, you have to come see the boys. So she came in and she was pumping breast milk for us while she was in the hospital. Yeah. And then when she went home and she would put it in the freezer and she was doing all the things. Mm. Like, and so she breastfed, well, she shipped milk every single day from Texas to Arizona.
Yeah.
She would ship milk every single day for 4 months.
Wow.
Yeah. So the first 4 months, every day she did not miss. She did not, well, maybe not every day, like a couple of days she would freeze enough to send us. And then, so.
That's
and there
incredible.
It is. And now,
and
19 months later.
How did it feel looking at your boys after everything that you'd gone through? There they were.
You know, it was very, I would say, bizarre because we go in and they're tiny. I mean, Sander was 4 pounds. 11 ounces. Silas was 4 pounds, 13 ounces. They were so small.
Were you allowed to hold them? Were you allowed to
hold them? So here's the thing. So when we go up to them, we're like, and the nurse said, put pressure on them. Like, let them, because you know, you're afraid to touch them because they were so small. Yeah. And then, you know, they had the tubes and stuff so we could hold them. We just had to be, maneuver all these wires. Yeah. And it was, you know, I think I held Silas first, and just to have him on my chest was like, oh my gosh, it was like so bizarre. It was bizarre.
Well, we talk a lot about bonds on this podcast because I think there's such a massive pressure put on this instant bond that we're meant to feel when we meet our children. And actually, I think what we've discovered a lot is that it's okay not to say I felt like instantly connected, because sometimes that grows.
Yeah.
Was there a moment where it just felt really surreal and out of it and then it starts seeping through, or was it an instant thing?
The thing is, so for me, it felt good. The skin thing felt good. It was like a moment of, okay, we're here. But it was too crazy for me to be like, I think if I was a mom maybe that delivered the baby, you know, I think maybe, but for us it was, for me it didn't happen for a while. I mean, of course the bond was there, but it was just lots of turmoil. And I was going to the hospital like 4 times a day to feed them, so it was more like, it was like I gotta
logistics
change my life
thing to do.
But not until we got home. We were all just like sleeping one day, and me and Scott woke up and we like looked at each other like, oh my gosh, like this is crazy. But it grows every single day.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes Sander does not, like when I get back to our Airbnb today, I mean, he'll be sleeping. But if I walk in there, I'm holding him for an hour. He does not want to get down. Silas comes over. His love is like just tapping me on my knee. And he'll hold my hand, you know. And it's like those things that just, you're like, oh, my God, they love me. Because, you know, I have mom guilt, dad guilt for going to work.
Well, you juggle a lot, don't you?
Yes.
How do you manage that and that dad guilt?
The first time, you know, they were still in the NICU and I had to go film a commercial in Vancouver. And I got on that plane and I cried for like an hour and a half. I was just like, I felt so bad. Like, I was just like, oh, my gosh. I'm, you know, and I didn't know where that was coming from. But I think it was like partly, okay, Scott's there and then the boys are in the NICU. And it's just like all this, you know, you're afraid you're going to miss something. They don't even know, but you are just like so sad. Even up until this past January, I think is when I started to feel better about going to work. I remember they were in New York with us. I had just left them and I was going to my evening event and I called my friend, sent my friend a voice memo who lives here in the UK, to be quite honest. And I'm like crying in this voice memo because I'm just like, I can't believe I'm leaving the kids. Like, what do you do? And she was just like, you know, her mom told her, everything that you're doing for them. They may not know, but just know, she was like, everything you do, you're doing for them. So it's really okay.
Well, I end every podcast with you finishing three sentences, okay?
I love it.
Being a dad means?
I can be challenged every single day.
Since becoming a dad, I?
Love life even more.
And I'm happy when?
When Scott, Silas, and Sander and I are all sitting on the couch watching Peppa Pig.
Gotta love the pig.
Gotta love Peppa Pig.
And I'm gonna say, I'm gutted that it's not a Friday and then we're not having a donut together.
Oh my gosh. Well, next year I'll come back.
We will have donuts.
And, you know, and we will have donuts. We have to make sure it's a Friday.
Perfect. Shaunty, thank you so much for coming. It's been an absolute pleasure.
I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.